This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Martin, I have a question for you.
Yes, Paul.
What is short, gray, and furry and smells terrible when wet?
Donald Trump. Oh, wait, no.
that's orange. And it's not short, it's just small hands.
Ah.
The answer is the premiere episode of Comics in Black and White, subtitle Cerebus.
Every episode is a premiere.
This is the fourth episode of Comics in Black and White. This week we are talking about Cerebus, the aardvark that we all love to probably not know that much about unless we actually have read it.
Yes.
And I have finally read it. Martin, you have read this in the past, but this is my initial offering with Cerebus. And Cerebus, it's, you could, if you want to find it, you can get it. It's not like it's, you know, impossible to get.
Easily.
It's in print and whatnot, but it's not the kind of thing you're going to just go down to the comic shop and find volume one on the shelf necessarily. You're probably not going to find it on sale unless you go to the right sites, because it's not the kind of thing that goes on sale. It just is the kind of thing that is. So when I wanted to read Cerebus, I went on eBay, and I was lucky enough to find a lot of the first four volumes of Cerebus for like $40. That's like $10 a volume. That's pretty good, because it's like $30 for the first volume. I think the second volume is $40 cover price.
Hmm.
The first four volumes, their cover price now is like that kind of $30 to $40 range, I think. At least the first couple.
Unless you go to Amazon, like, they're $20. Less than 20.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Let's check that right now.
Yeah, I promise you. I think volume one is like $17.
That might actually be a pretty good discount. I might need to know this.
And also, I'm going to correct you because my shop does have Cerebus on the shelf. Yeah, $12.99. Cerebus volume one.
Oh, I've seen it on this shelf at a shop elsewhere, but I'm just saying you're not going to go into any shop and find it.
Not something
always stocked. So yeah, on Amazon they actually have pretty good prices used.
Yep.
I was thinking of new prices. Let's see what the new price is. Oh, it's Amazon's so annoying. This is the first print version. It's $80.
Yeah.
Anyways, cover price for Cerebus is $30.
Yep.
You can, but if you look around, finding a used copy is a good way to go. They refer to the volumes of Cerebus as phone books because they're about the size of a phone book.
Yes,
they are. They're printed on like the original comic paper that was used, which is nicer paper than a phone book, but it's still, you know, there's nothing fancy about these volumes. It's very much just collecting the works. It's a good collection. It's, you know, solid and full of stuff and everything, but there's nothing fancy about it. So getting a used copy, I think, is the way to go on it.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you just really want to support Dave Sim. You can also, Martin, I think you know the website because I know it's a little bit of a different name, but you can buy it all digitally from Dave Sim, and that is the only legitimate way to get it digitally.
Cool.
And they have a deal. You can get the entire run of Cerebus for $100 that way, which is ridiculously cheap when you figure there's like 17 volumes or something like that.
Right. So you can get some of Cerebus on Comixology. But I think the only trade they have is High Society, which is Volume 2.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get anything else in trade. And single issues, I don't think they're all in there either. But yeah, if you go to CerebusDownloads.com, that's run by Dave Sim. You can get the first two volumes for free as digital copies if you would like. There's different bundles too in here. But you can buy the entire run of Cerebus for $100, which is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And they have other options, like anywhere between 15 a piece. Then there's like, you know, two volumes for 22 or three for 30. Whatever. There's different options.
Yeah, so I'm looking on in-stock trades right now to kind of get a sense of the new price for things. Volume 1 is $30. Of course, none of this is an order. So that makes it a little bit harder. But volume one is $30. So I had got the first four volumes, and I wanted volume five because I was starting to kind of poke around for what was next. And Volume 5, I had more trouble finding a good price for. So I ended up getting it on eBay for $19 shipped. But yeah, Volume 5 is $30 cover price. Like on in-stock trades, it's $21. I didn't think of looking on Amazon. I should have looked there. But I kind of looked in the other places and had a harder time finding a better price on that one.
By the way, if you go to eBay, you can buy the entire run, single issues, all 300 issues, for $4,000.
Good deal. Yeah, so the Jocko's Story is Volume 5, and on Amazon, without shipping, it's $18.80 is the lowest price. So I think I did good finding it for $19.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah, so it's the kind of thing where if you keep your eyes open and look around a little bit when you want the next volume, you could probably find a decent price. But ultimately, even if you just order them on in-stock trades, you're getting a lot of volume for that price. So like Volume 1 is $30 cover price. It's 25 mm-hmm. issues of comics. So even if you paid full price, you're actually getting a pretty damn good value. Whereas, you know, with a lot of stuff, like IDW, for example, their trades typically, at least with, like, you know, a big property like Ninja Turtles or, you know, Transformers or something, it's pretty much, without a doubt, four issues a trade, and they're $18 a trade. So you're spending more than $4 an issue that way. With Cerebus, you're spending just over a dollar an issue, and that's a good price point for a trade. So
do you want to explain what Cerebus is for people that have never heard of it, which is probably the majority of readers today?
Yeah, I only knew Cerebus at all because he had crossed over into Ninja Turtles in the original Mirage run. And then before I read any Cerebus, I also found out that he had a crossover in issue 10 of Spawn, yes, which I found incredibly interesting. Which, so Cerebus, yeah,
it's a little side story on that. I don't know if you know this, Paul, but Eastman and Laird were inspired by Cerebus to create TMNT after they met Dave Sim at a convention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I knew that he's one of the part of the, like, the story of the inspiration for Ninja Turtles. And there were a lot of different things that kind of went into it, but Dave Sim. Cerebus started, I believe it's 77. Does that sound right?
Yes.
77. He started publishing Cerebus. It's always been self-published, right?
Yes.
It has run for over 300 issues or over 300
issues? 300
issues
from 77 to 2004.
Yeah, and this year they – well, actually, I guess 2016, last year, they had Cerebus and Hell come out, which is just a one-shot.
Nope. That's been pushed back. It's coming out this
year. No, because I own it.
Oh, the one-shot. Yeah, but they're supposed to be doing a mini-series.
They're doing a mini-series. That's what I was getting to. So they had a one-shot in 2016, and there's going to be a mini-series coming up, which will be the first time Cerebus has had anything new since, what'd you say, 2003? So 14 years, 13 years?
2004, yeah.
Yeah, so anyways, yeah. So Cerebus is created by Dave Sim. It's a black-and-white comic. Cerebus is an aardvark. It began as a parody, basically, of Conan, right?
Yes.
And evolved into something very different. Dave Sim is an interesting character himself. I definitely – I want to read more about Dave Sim and get a better picture of kind of – you know, I know some of the basics of the history of Cerebus, but it would have been awesome if they had, like, an annotated volume of Cerebus to where you learned a lot more about the history or the choices he made or the influences and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You can clearly see a lot of the influences in this. Like, the source material he's taking from is pretty obvious. And it does give this first volume more of a sense of parody. But I think that even in the first volume, the quality goes beyond being parody. Mm-hmm. When I started reading it, I was like, well, this is good. I mean, it's a good read, but I really can't imagine reading 17 volumes or whatever. It is 300 issues of comics. Mm-hmm. You know, I figured, well, I'll probably, you know, my first impression was I'll read this and then I'll, you know, trade it in or give it to somebody or something. And then I'll read volume two and so on and, you know, kind of liquidate them as I go. And then when I get to volume four, if I feel like it, maybe I'll get volume five. By the time I got to the end of this first volume, these aren't leaving my possession now. So
I'm curious though, Paul. How long did it take you to get beyond that initial sentiment?
Not terribly long. Let me flip through a little bit here. So I mean, it starts off interesting. You could also, I mean, just even in this first volume, you can see the quality of the art, like, drastically increased from the beginning. The first issue is really...
There was I think a new artist came in, like, part...
That's later.
Yeah.
No, it's later. It's volumes later when Gerhard comes in. This is all Dave Sim at this point.
Oh, yeah. He came in, like, 60s, like, 61, 62, something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I know that was a big change, and a big thing with him is I think he's the background artist, if I remember correctly, so it added a lot more detail to everything. Yeah, so, I mean, you're going through, and, like, you know, obviously it's very – he's, like, kind of barbarian. The interesting thing with Cerebus is that he's this fuzzy little aardvark, you know? He's a little animal. Mm-hmm. But he's a badass, and he's a badass all the way through this, and, like, he doesn't have that. A lot of times you get books like this where the, you know, the diminutive character is, like, kind of gets by hook or crook, you know? It's like they kind of eke by, or they get lucky, or they're always a little on the scared side kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Not Cerebus. He's as badass as any of the warriors he's going up against, and that sort of thing. I think when I first started to like it a little bit more, where I was like, okay, this is getting a little bit more interesting rather than just being a kind of straightforward tale, is when they get to the Song of Red Sophia.
Mm-hmm.
Which, how many issues in that is? It's only the third issue. That's when it started piquing my interest a little bit more.
Interesting.
I didn't look this up, but Red Sophia is clearly a parody of Red Sonja, right?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty obvious. So I was curious when Red Sonja began.
It couldn't have been much earlier than this. Probably early 70s, I would say. No, yeah, 73.
Okay, see, you're quicker at looking it up. That's why I give you the opportunity to.
But I mean, it's exactly the same. It's the same outfit and everything.
Yeah, the chainmail bikini, as they say.
Yeah.
I mean, this is obviously parody of it. Like, Red Sonja, I don't know about the early Red Sonja stuff, but I've read some of the Dark Horse Red Sonja that was written by, what is her name? Oh, man, I'm totally going to blank on her name now.
Is it the girl that was doing Secret Six? What the hell's her name? Gail Simone?
Yeah, Gail Simone. Yeah. Gail Simone's Red Sonja. And she's a very strong character. She may be dressed in a very provocative outfit, but, like, she's a very strong character. So in this, she's... Yeah, they play up the sexuality more, and she's kind of a ridiculous character, even though she's still pretty much a badass warrior.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of wants to get beat by Cerebus so he could be, like... She could be, you know, beholden to him. But then she'll do whatever he wants her to do. But then some guy comes along and thinks he's going to steal her away, and Cerebus doesn't really care. Mm-hmm. And she kicks the guy's ass, you know? Mm-hmm. So anyways, this is when it started to get a little bit more interesting, because it wasn't just a straightforward story. And it started to get mixed more with some ridiculousness. And you start to get some very interesting side characters. So, you know, Red Sophia is the first one. And then you get... come on, they say his name constantly, and I can't find it the time I'm looking for it. Elrod, that's it. Elrod the Albino, and he's been sticking through it the whole time. When he first came up, I was like, what the hell is this guy? He talks like Foghorn Leghorn.
Yes.
So I don't know if he's a parody of Foghorn Leghorn, or if he's a parody of whoever Foghorn Leghorn is a parody of, because I'm assuming that he is himself a parody.
Sure.
So he's just a bumbling idiot that thinks that Cerebus is a kid in a bunny suit. And just never quite really gets what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Then after that, you get to where Cerebus is always getting into trouble with different people trying to do these different things. Then when he gets away, he ends up just running into some other trouble, pretty much.
Mm.
So he runs into this group that they think he's a god. Then you get the spider that bites him. Oh, I love this. You get the priest that is wearing a Cerebus costume that is absolutely ridiculous looking. Oh, man, it's so good. It has elements of, like, the kind of cartooniness, like some of the stuff that we talked about in Bone that's just kind of, like, ridiculous, like somebody not getting something that's totally obvious right in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so as I went on, it just grew on me more and more. I'm kind of flipping through it right now.
So I'm going to tell you while you're flipping through. So I read probably the first six volumes previously of Cerebus, And I remember enjoying it a little bit more the first time I read it as opposed to this time reading it. So I don't know if it's just because I'm so busy lately and I just didn't have as much time to enjoy it or what. But reading much of this first volume was kind of not quite a chore, but it was hard at times. And it wasn't really until close to where I've stopped now, which is past a little bit past the halfway point, when the cockroach is introduced.
Mm-hmm.
When now I'm starting to get a little bit more interested in what's going on.
Yeah, that's really where this volume starts to get good, because I actually just coincidentally flipped up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Where he ends up in Palnu, and you get the oh god, I don't know what his title is. The guy who's in charge in Palnu. It's like, you know, it's a kind of like the Roman type of society, something like that. Yeah. But he's a parody of Groucho Marx,
right?
And so you get these different characters like that that are just like they're fun to read, mm-hmm. because you have this voice in your head and it's really obvious. That's where it really starts to get good, because he hires Cerebus as his head of the kitchen staff, which means that Cerebus is his head of security, because he won't give anybody a proper title because he doesn't want anybody to know what they're doing, because it's a bureaucracy and you can't let people actually know how things work, and that's how you stay in power.
Mm-hmm.
So Cerebus defends him against an assassination attempt. He throws the guy off a ledge, so that guy's dead. And meanwhile, the guy he's protecting is really kind of bumbling, but he's also very conniving.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he's very, like, nonchalant about everything. Like, nothing bad is happening around him. But at the same time, you also see that deep down, like, he's in control but just doesn't care about, like, running things well. Mm-hmm. It's all just, you know, staying in power so you could be opulent.
Pretty much. I mean, it's a social commentary on politics, so... Mm-hmm. That's what, you know, you don't get a whole lot of that in this first volume, I don't think. There's like, because it's a lot of setup, right? And I think I was talking to Nick about this a couple of weeks ago, when I was discussing with him that we're reading, Cerebus for this podcast. And he made a good point that I think for most people, You can't really get much enjoyment out of this until maybe you get to High Society, which is the second volume.
Mm-hmm.
Because the first phone book really is establishing all the characters and everything in the world. And then all the subsequent stuff kind of builds upon what you learned about in the first volume.
Yeah, and like often happens in something like this that ends up being so long running, the intention wasn't for it to be something so long running. He was just starting to make something, and mm-hmm. it became this over time. So in the beginning, it's you're just making something, mm-hmm. and what it ends up becoming, it builds. So it's not like this isn't one of those things where he went into it in the beginning with the same with like the whole scope in his head. So the beginning is the same quality as the middle is the end. It's a living and breathing thing, mm-hmm. Which is that's a big part of why I want to do this podcast. Is there are so many things like this that it's just so alive, and you see the change over time. Whereas a good example of the flip side of the coin, something that there's a clear plan from beginning to end, was we talked about Rachel Rising,
mm-hmm.
and that one, the beginning is the same quality as any other part of it, because the plan was always in place. He knew what he was doing the entire time.
I don't know if that's not untrue here, though. Go ahead.
I don't think Dave Sim started writing this intending it to... I mean, it's easy to say he didn't intend it to be 300 issues long. That's easy to say. I don't think he started writing this intending it to be a big ongoing thing. You look at the very beginning, and I don't really get the impression that he really expected it to continue to be ongoing. It was just something that he created, but then it kept on going with it, and then it became something bigger, and that's when he wanted to start giving bigger commentary on things with it. Well, I think that once you get a little ways into it, you start to get more of that social commentary and stuff, and you see a bigger scope to the stories. Once he gets into Paulina, you get all that. And then at that point, everything is really building more and more from there. You know, he's working at, in Polnu. Then he wants to leave. So he leaves. He ends up with a band of, you know, another army that wants to conquer Polnu. Mm-hmm. He ends up with them. But then he gets drugged and kidnapped and by, like, a secret society or a cult, you know, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. And then there's a jump in time, and he missed everything. So that this army he was with that was going to go and conquer Polnu got defeated.
Right.
And but now we jumped ahead in time, and there's a guy who's wanted to take a lot more political stuff. You get the cockroach back, and you get Elrod the Albino back. And then he gets away from them. But yeah, so that's where you start to see, okay, well, there's bigger pieces fitting together, and the stories are spanning across more issues. And there's definitely, like, there's a lot more commentary happening in it at this point. I think my favorite is the last story, though, where he had an injured leg. He ends up at the girls' school. Mm-hmm. I know you haven't read this in your recent read, so tell me if this isn't ringing a bell to you. But he injures his leg. He ends up at this girls' school where there's only three students, and then the lady in charge, who's an old lady. You know, this kind of thing where rich people send their daughters off to get an education, and then, you know, the headmistress or whatever has to protect them, protect their virtue and all that stuff. So it's a really interesting thing. And then you start to get towards the end of it, and Cerebus knows that there's something weird lurking about. It ends up that the headmistress isn't a mistress. It's a guy, and it's an old, magician or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to conjure this beast to go around killing everybody, basically. And he's using the girls as, like, a channel for that. Mm-hmm. And then they go, and he's all ready to conquer, and they go to this castle. And the castle is an artist. And so, I mean, now you're getting art commentary. You're getting commentary about what sells in art. I mean, the focus is all on breasts. And then you get this unveiled monster there that is a... So Woman Thing is the monster that this guy conjured. And he's like, oh, the original beast is here. I can conjure him. And it's a parody of Swamp Thing. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to find the name of it because they don't call it Swamp Thing. So he's going to, you know, control two beasts and conquer everything. He's going to be legendary. Something, that's what they call it. And Something and Woman Thing get it on and smash the magician in the process, and he's dead. That's the end of the volume, basically. Cerebus gets a bunch of gold from the artist because he feels bad that his friend was killed.
Yeah, I didn't get that far. I vaguely remember that. This has been way too long, Paul.
Yeah, that was that part was really enjoyable. I think that once you get through to that, like, it gets a little dry in places. I think once you get into Polnu, it's good for quite a while. And then once he gets out of Polnu, it starts to drag a little bit. The reading gets thicker. Mm-hmm. Then you get, so he's with this other army that wants to conquer Polnu, and that's where it gets a little thicker. And then he gets abducted. There's this issue that's, like, all in his head where it's a strange issue. I don't want to explain it all. And then suddenly he's away from these people, but it's taken a jump in time. He's been drugged and knocked out longer than he thought he was. And there's somebody that's like posing as the president. He has the cockroach and Elrod the Albino, who's going by something different. They're going around selling like war bonds, basically, with phony promises to make money. This guy's completely fraudulent. He's going to take over everything. He's so much better than everybody else because he's powerful. So, you know, because he's powerful, he's rich, and he... You know, he doesn't concern himself with how stuff is going to work out. It's just going to work out, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. But that's a really pretty fun section, and then you get on to the girls' school and the magician conjuring the beast and all that stuff. I thought that was all quite enjoyable.
Hmm. Yeah, I'll have to finish that up because I don't remember that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, we only recorded 2 weeks late. You could finish it, but you know, that's cool.
I get busy, Paul. I get busy.
You're busy with too many podcasts, which you get busy with.
Yeah, that is true. Maybe I'll catch up when I take my my little break.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's hard, dude. Like, this is 500 and how many pages?
It's about 500 pages. Like, just look, 530, I think.
Yeah.
And it's, it goes quick at times, but it goes slower at times. I mean, it took me a little bit. I could have got it. We were supposed to initially record this 2 weeks ago, and I could have pounded through it, but then we had to push it back off a week because our schedules didn't work up right.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next week we had to push it off again because we were going to have the time, but then you had something come up, so we had to push it back off. And it worked out because I got down to yesterday. I had about 100 pages to go, and 100 mm-hmm. pages wasn't too hard to just push through. 100 pages is what, like 5 issues of comics?
Roughly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, that's not, getting through 5 comics isn't that bad. Getting through 10 comics of the same thing can be a little bit steeper, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so reading this, you know, getting, as I got deeper into it, I really liked it. And I already had 2 through 4, you know, sitting there, so I'm good to go for a while. And I started looking around, kind of get an idea of what it would cost to kind of keep getting them. And then I saw that 5 was a little harder to find for a cheaper price.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to, I've mentioned before, I know on VCP, and I've probably mentioned it here, but Bull Moose is a local store out here that sells books and music and video games and stuff like that.
Yep.
The best thing about them is, number one, they have good prices on books. They're already 35% off. If they get something used, it's an even better price. So I went in there, and they had a bunch of Cerebus, which is a random thing to find that somebody traded in.
Sure.
Like I said, you don't find that all the time. It's, you know, Cerebus is the kind of thing that you find kind of a random assortment spattered around, but I would venture to guess most people who get Cerebus
this show
probably are just going to keep it if they get it, you know?
Yeah, I would think so. This is not something that, I mean, maybe you want to read it and pass it on to somebody that you might feel would enjoy it.
Yeah, but it's less likely to be the thing like, oh, I'm going to read a whole bunch of it. I've read it all, you know, and I'm good trading it in. You know, I'm good selling it.
Yeah.
I think you see less of that than you do with other things.
I think it depends how far in you go, though, Paul.
Yeah.
Cause like I said, I think the first volume may be a little rough at times. It does get better, and then it gets great, and then it kind of, you just kind of don't want to read it. You know, like the last bit of it gets a little too Cerebus. And I guess
yeah,
as we keep reading, I mean, I'm sure you're going to keep reading because you bought more volumes of this.
Yes, that's what I was getting to. So I found they had a bunch of Bull Moose, but they were random assortments. And some of them were in the first 4 volumes, which I already had. They didn't have number 5, unfortunately, but they had number 6.
Mm-hmm.
And 7 or 8, I don't remember exactly what numbers they all were, but I got 4 more volumes, and I saw them there. I was like, I'll just pick them up later because I'll find them for that price again. They were all like around $10, like $8 to $11 each. And then I started looking around at how much they cost. I'm like, man, getting them for around $10 a piece, that's pretty damn good. So I started driving myself crazy about it. So I went back and got all of those. And I just bought Volume 5 on eBay to fill the gaps. Now I have 1 through 6 and then an assortment after that, so I'll have to fill more gaps as I go on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is kind of – it's up my alley in that it's not traditional comic stuff. Like, I like stuff that's more off the wall, more unique and creative. Not to say that mainstream stuff can't be that by any means, but I mean, this is – pretty damn unique. You know, I mean, superheroes are superheroes. Even if it's done well, it's still superhero. This is like, it's a freaking aardvark, you know, it's different. Different can be bad too. Like I've tried stuff out that looked different that was just crap too. And this is different. It's not crap. It's good. Well, it can be heavy at times, but it's intellectual, which is also up my alley. I like something that'll be challenging and make me think, you know?
Right. And he's definitely not a hero, right? Like, he's only after himself.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, he does heroic things from time to time. Like, he has a conscience. You know, he's not 100%, like, just it doesn't matter. He's only out for self.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also very much out for self. And that, you know, it's like any time that it's a matter of conscience comes up, it's weighing, like, do I just be concerned with what I get out of this? Or, you know. But yeah, it's very, and another aspect for me too is that this is an influence to Ninja Turtles, which has inspired a lot of different stuff that I've checked out, because if you really love something, you want to know what inspired it. So Cerebus is something I always wanted to check out because of that. Usagi crossed over, so that was like another thing that kind of had Usagi on the edge of my radar. But stuff like Ronin, I finally got digitally. I barely started reading that. I haven't gotten very far in it yet, but I always wanted to read that because it was an influence. Frank Miller's Daredevil stuff was an influence. All these different things that were an influence to it, I wanted to be exposed to. So this is one that I think in reading through it, it's still like it's on the good like the good side for me. I want to keep going with it. But I can see getting to the point where I'm just like, ah, screw this. I don't want to anymore. Because it is. It's heavy. You know, I mean, it's some of it's heavy, a lot of work.
Yeah, it's very heavy.
But yeah, so I would definitely recommend anybody that's been liking what we've been reading so far. And I know that there's a group of people that I've gotten to read Usagi and other things. Those people, definitely, it's worth giving a shot to. You know, even if you don't love it and don't want to continue with it, it's the kind of thing that you'll read it and appreciate the fact that you read it. It'll be exposure to, like, you know, one more thing. I'm definitely going to keep reading it. And I know from talking to you and from talking to other people that it's really a few volumes in when it really gets its flow, when it really gets going somewhere. So I am looking forward to that.
Yeah. Well, and there's interesting character progressions, too.
Yeah.
And there's stuff that happens in later volumes that is established here. Like the stuff when, oh God, what was the name of those people? The pigs. There you go. The people that live on the ground and have that, that aardvark statue that they worship. Like some of that, the themes that you see there come back quite a bit. But grow exponentially as you go down. And you start seeing more of that in volume two. So I think after we get through the second phone book of this, I think it'd be interesting to discuss maybe if you remember what happens in volume one, kind of see the contrast between the two. Especially because I think High Society, you could probably start there and maybe not even need the stuff in this volume, but it does set some of that stuff up.
Yeah, so a couple things about it. I'm looking up on Wikipedia while you were talking. So Gerhard comes on the 65th issue. One of the things it's known for is the dexterity of its artwork, especially after that point. That's one thing that I'll say, you know, we've talked about this a lot before, but you know, black and white artwork, it's so easy for people to just overlook it because now we're so used to color and bright and you know, highly defined and all that stuff. This artwork to me is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like the stuff that they do throughout this, because it's black and white. It's all done by hand. They don't have all the crap that they have nowadays to make it easier to do artwork. You know, it still takes a lot of skill to do artwork, of course, but I think that all the tools nowadays, even if your skill is what's going to get it up to a certain level, the effort it takes to get to that level, I think, is probably what's different nowadays. That would be my guess. I obviously don't use any technology to do artwork. So, yeah, I mean, just the, you know, we've talked about this with other stuff, like Terry Moore's art. We know people who hate it, who call it chicken scratch. I think it's beautiful artwork.
Those people are crazy.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, you know, that's the case here where this is unique artwork. There's a lot of detail to it. At times the detail is looser, but it's just like, to me, this is like a real work of art. When you look at, and then that's the artwork, and then the content of it, it's entertaining. At times this first volume did get a little bit tedious, but it's entertaining while at the same time having a lot of things that make you think about religion and politics and society and you know, capitalism and just all these different things. So anything that can challenge you in those ways and, you know, also be entertaining and also be pleasing to look at, like, you know, this definitely isn't for somebody who just wants to read, trying to think of something that is really just openly approachable. I don't know, like, it's easy to just say like Marvel, but you know, somebody who just wants to read like the really mainstream Marvel stuff, you know, the stuff that's always out in the events. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Some people want to read that and that's cool. You know, it's just like the people who, when they watch movies, all they want to watch is the, you know, like the comedies and romances, you know, the the easy, approachable movies that aren't challenging at all.
Sure.
Some people only want to read this, or watch the movies that are heavy and the kind of thing you have to sit there and shut the fuck up when you watch it, because because you have to fully pay attention to this. This is like that. I mean, there's a lot to this. There's depth to the art. There's depth to the writing. There's depth to the content. So it's not going to be for everybody. But anybody who wants that kind of little bit more challenge to it, it's a good thing for them.
Agreed. And actually, I'm curious. I haven't read a whole lot of 70s comics, but from my understanding, part of the reason he wanted to do this was to have comics for adults so that they didn't feel shitty reading comics. And so my assumption based on that statement is maybe at this point comics just weren't very deep. But look, I wasn't around in the mid to late 70s, so I have no idea. But I do know that a lot of the stuff that we see in the 80s with comics getting darker, that's part of the reason for that happening.
That's one of the things that the black and white. This kicked off the black and white boom of comics, and that's where creators were making the stuff that they really wanted to and exploring different things. And a lot of that stuff got into a darker nature. You look at older comics, and like nowadays you would say that they appeal to adults because the artwork isn't as appealing as modern comics, and the writing is a lot denser, in that they have just a crap load of words on every page because they do stuff like tell you what's going on even though they're showing it to you, and it's a lot wordier in comics back then. But if you go back to then, like, comics were all, even if adults liked them, like, what Marvel or DC comics weren't approachable to kids? Like, that was the market back then, was kids. It wasn't, they weren't making this stuff for adults. So this really was opening a door to adults. You look at all the black and white comics that we've been talking, or, the ones that go back to then especially, and even the ones that stay, cleaner and more approachable, where like if a kid read it there wouldn't be any problem with it, they get really heavy and really adult in what they're talking about. I mean, the first Ninja Turtles stuff is like drastically different than what the cartoon ended up being, as far as the first Ninja Turtle cover has a sword dripping blood on the cover. You never saw that in the cartoon. They didn't really use their weapons in the cartoon. Michelangelo couldn't even have nunchucks in the cartoon, So definitely a big difference here. Nope, any final thoughts on Cerebus?
No, it's good. If you're willing to stick with it, it'll be worth it, but you will be sticking for quite a bit.
300 issues, that's nothing. So, Martin, do you know what we're going to read next time? Because I know what we're going to read for next time.
Yeah, we're doing TMNT Volume 1.
No, we're actually not going to do that quite yet. We're going to do Love and Rockets.
Oh, is that what's next? Okay.
Yeah, we're going to do that next. Jay, not only did he send me the first volume of Love and Rockets, he sent me the second volume separately.
I saw that.
Like a week later. I'm like, what the heck? He's just like, I just really like it. Like, okay, Jay. So Jay gets his way. We will be reading Love and Rockets for our next episode.
Awesome.
After that, we'll do Ninja Turtles Volume 1 of the IDW hardcover collection. Ninja Turtles, we will work through volume by volume, not in any kind of a rush, but that's something that I actually do want to go through everything bit by bit, whereas everything else we'll kind of read it, talk about it, and then down the road when we read more, we may jump back in to give new impressions of it. So for next week, do you know what the first trade is called? I don't have it in front of me.
Let's see. I don't have it in front of me either. Love and Rockets Volume 1 is Maggie the Mechanic.
Maggie the Mechanic. I knew I'd know it when I heard it.
That's not it. That's not it.
I think it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
You might be right.
I'm pretty positive that is, but while we're talking, I'll double check it here. So Love and Rockets, it's one of the things when I first it was first brought onto my radar, is that figuring out what to get and when to read whatever is a little bit confusing, because it's not Love and Rockets Volume 1, Love and Rockets Volume 2.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything is under Love and Rockets, but each volume is it's titled its own title.
Mm-hmm.
So Maggie the Mechanic, yes, is Volume 1, and that's what we're going to read for next week. Or not next week, next episode.
next week!
It's interesting because there are two brothers creating it, and half is one brother's work, and then half is another brother's work. And from what I've been told, they have, you know, there's similarities, but there's also a drastically different feel to them and different ways that they go about storytelling, from what I've been told. I'm very eager to get into this. I haven't read any yet, but just glancing through the first trade a little bit, I think it's the kind of thing that it's going to suck me in. And just knowing the people that I know that have recommended this, I'm expecting to be sucked into it. So read along with us. Get Maggie the Mechanic, Volume 1 of Love and Rockets, and we'll be talking about that in a couple of weeks. Until then, you can find me on Twitter at Who's Paul. You can find Martin on Twitter at Geekvine. You can email us hello@nerdylegion.com. We're always looking for suggestions and ideas for future episodes. So if there's something that you really love or would really like to hear us talk about that falls into the category of black and white comics, let us know and we'll check it out and we'll see if we could add it to our list. Fortunately, we have a pretty good list already, so we're always going to have some selection to what we want to read.
Yeah.
So until next episode, I can't talk anymore. So go read something.